Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
So happy birthday to the baby boy, Bootsy.
Michael, a lot of people wonder, will you actually have a pony ride for young Bootsy today?
He's too small. The kid's got to be about 6 feet tall.
But he's got height.
Yeah, but it's height for a three-year-old.
But he looks like a five-year-old.
Okay, but he's too small for a pony.
For those asking, the pony ride photo is in a place of prominence in our living room. It's family photos from weddings, graduations, births, and then there's this awkward picture of Michael on a pony.
With his legs touching the ground.
Dragging.
The Tony Kornheiser Show is on now.
Alrighty then. I am on the north side of Uncle Benny's table. Michael is on the southwest side of Uncle Benny's table. Sean is where Sean is. Nigel is where Nigel is. Steve Clemenson in Edgewater, Maryland. Dear Thurston Howell III, he gave Bootsy $5, which is $4 more than you got. He got ripped off because a dollar in 1950 is worth $10.64 today. Basically, you gave your grandson 50 cents. Way to go, Grandpa. You bought Bootsy a half a pack of Hubba Bubba. What's for Hanukkah? Dreidel that doesn't spin? Steve Clemenson, Edgewater, Maryland.
Update.
Let's get an update, Michael. What did Tony give the baby boy Bootsy for his birthday?
I successfully shamed you on this very show because the first thing you did when you walked in was you had a folded up $20 bill with a handwritten note on a piece of yellow legal pad paper.
That's right.
You couldn't even use one of the many birthday cards that your wife brought and signed for you. And the best part is, with every
Cheers,
Tony Kornheiser.
That's right.
Cheers.
Happy third birthday, Bootsy. Cheers, Tony Kornheiser.
Beautiful handwriting.
$20.
So that's straight in the piggy bank.
Okay. $20 for the kid. How was the party? How was dinner? I mean, what did you think? I enjoyed myself enormously.
I worked really hard.
Yeah, you had hamburgers were great and hot dogs.
I didn't know that the night before you and mom had grilled hamburgers and hot dogs.
Yeah,
so
I did.
You could have told me that when
That's
I saw you in the morning.
I like them.
So I didn't have to double down on burgers and dogs for you two nights in a row.
But I like them. They're very good. They tasted very good. I was happy to see everybody. I'm not invited all that often, so I was very happy to go.
You then wrote me the saddest text message the following morning.
What did I write?
Do you want me to actually read it?
Yes. I didn't think it was that sad. I thought it was revealing, not that
Okay,
sad.
Before I read it, you want me to read everything?
Well, I don't know. Just the part about, you know, what I'm not good at.
Oh, yeah. This is everything was great. I don't know how to talk to small children. I feel badly about this. Sent at 5:36 in the morning.
This is my grandchild, and I don't really know what to say.
So Walker's down on the ground playing with some new presents, playing with Legos, his train set. Dad is sitting on a armchair and is just sort of cracking jokes at the kid's expense. And then he walks outside.
Yeah, that's what I do. From Elaine Povich, who I assume is one of the Poviches. Hi, I attended by Zoom. I saw the clip of you and Wilbon. Without knowing about it, I thought it was kind of brusque and cut off abruptly. I wondered why you both didn't get a bigger role. Now I know. Ugh, Elaine. See? Somebody else knew that too. The University of Maryland Journalism Department did not practice journalism with Wilbon and with me. So we're never doing anything
for
them
again. That name means something for that department.
Yeah, so we're never doing anything again. And we love Shirley Povich and we love George Solomon, but you can't treat people that badly. And from Jim Flynn in Colebrook, Connecticut. Tony, I'm catching up on old episodes. How did your video presentation for George Solomon go? So that's funny. I found out today, just looking not before the Today Show, I was looking at Channel 4 News, and it is apparently Take Your Dog to Work Day. This is one of the stupidest ideas I've ever heard, unless you're a golf course superintendent. It's so stupid to take your dog to work. Now, I take my dog to work because I'm working in my house and my dog's living in the house. And my dog is right now staring out the window. She had a very good day today seeing Nigel, seeing Michael. But no one can think this is a good idea. No one can think Take Your Dog to Work Day is a good idea. Can't be a good idea, right? Stupid idea. From Brad Weiss, who is our friend and a teacher of consequence. I, too, was once subjected to a Mohs procedure, and I wish you an equally speedy recovery. Mine was held at the aptly named Duke Mohs Micrographic Surgery Clinic. It never occurred to me that I might ask to avoid the waiting room as I got the lab results, which would have been a relief, as I had my procedure at the tender age of 40, something while the room was packed with a parade of Alta Cockers. Had I done so, I might have allowed myself to note that the names of the rascals form a near-perfect alphabetic sequence. That is the names Dino, Eddie, Felix, Gene, D-E-F-G, as well as the names Brigatti, Cavalieri, Cornish, Dinelli, B-C-C-D, all begin with consecutive letters. No wonder you can't forget their ridiculous names. It's a built-in mnemonic. Where was I? Oh, yeah, skin cancer. Good luck. I have another one from Randy Szymanski in Dunmore, Pennsylvania. Why am I reading these now? Because they tickle me. I like them. Glad to hear your surgery went well. Does MOS stand for microscopic orange head surgery? By the way, I am the associate athletic director at the University of Scranton. We are proud to call John Walsh an alum, and I'm personally shocked that his support of our athletics teams didn't win him that election. That aside, you may also be interested to know that the late, great Pete Carlissimo was the athletic director here from 1953 to 1968, and he also coached football, basketball, and cross country here. Our biggest athletics fundraiser is the Peter A. Carlissimo Golf Tournament and Award Dinner, at which his son PJ, PJ Carlissimo, returns to present the award and tell epic stories each year. We've held the event at places like Saucon Valley and Philadelphia Cricket Club, where Michael has played many times in recent years. If you're ever passing through Scranton on your way to Binghamton or a camp reunion, my mother grew up minutes from Camp Kiyuma, but that's a story for another day. Let me know, and we'll take you and Michael to play Glenmora National Golf Club, a former web.com tour stop where our golf team plays. That's from Randy Szymanski in Dunmore, Pennsylvania. Another one from Andrew. Good news for Mr. Tony in Binghamton. The New Jersey Institute of Technology has announced it is leaving the Atlantic Sun Conference to join the America East Conference. Although I don't know that Binghamton will be able to defeat NJIT. Yes, we can defeat them. Yes, we can. We can, just so you know. This should give you the number of conference teams that will allow all teams to participate in the conference tournament. And I want to get to something else before I get to the main course here, which is my complaint with Eddie Bauer. This game, the 24 game that I talked about the other day that somebody sent me, where you look at four digits on a license plate and you see they add up to 24. I don't really understand how this game got any particular currency, because follow me now. Follow me. The lowest amount you can have on four digits is zero. The high, because it's all four zeros. The highest amount you can have is four nines, is 36.
I'm going to check that for you.
So somewhere in between would be 18, which would seem to me, logically, to be a number that would be most apt to hit on. 18, not 24, because 24 is two-thirds of the way up, right? It's two-thirds of the way up, 12, 24, sure. 36. So there is a 24. I've passed two. I've counted two on 24s, but I don't even understand the logic of the game. I don't know how it got to be 24. Have you ever heard of the game, Michael?
I have not, but do you think it's just a play to a number that's recognizable? You know, 24 hours in a day, you're thinking about the TV show 24 versus 18. I mean, or you could try and go down the rabbit hole of math as to what's the likelihood that they play certain numbers in the sequence. Are you getting more lows or more highs? Are they trying to always balance it out where you might hit your 18 more often?
Right. So since I'm simply OCD, I don't take the logic of any of that. I don't really understand any of that. But it does seem to me that the middle of 36 and zero, the middle is 18. That would, I think, but maybe not. Maybe mathematically that would not give you the best chance at all.
Well, let's play 18.
But I don't know. Well, I guess we could.
Let's play it. Well, you've already hit 24 twice. Yes. And that was probably in one walk.
Well, I probably had 18 a million times already, though, because my...
Well, let's try and check.
All right, I'll do that. So let me get to Eddie Bauer. Eddie Bauer makes the best T-shirt in the world, as far as I'm concerned. I love Eddie Bauer T-shirts. The other day, Eddie Bauer Memorial Day... Eddie Bauer
had... Let's just reset. What kind of T-shirt? Are we talking
long sleeve T-shirt. No pockets. Hate pockets. Hate pockets. Won't have pockets on a T-shirt.
He's searching through his wallet. Long-sleeve T-shirts.
I'm searching through my wallet to get the Eddie Bauer card that I have.
Oh, you're a card-carrying member.
Yeah.
Why do you have a random seven of hearts?
That's the story of
that's
Dornabos.
The magician.
Dornabos, the magician who had me rip the seven of hearts into little bitty pieces and then magically put it together in his own hand. So I carry that with me. I've told that story 1,000 times. I have the Eddie Bauer Adventure Rewards card. Okay, I have this card. I've never used it. It doesn't matter. I went online because you can only go online. And Eddie Bauer, because I bought stuff there, sends me 20 emails a day. So on Memorial Day, they had a 50% off sale. 50% off their T-shirts. Their T-shirts are normally about I don't know, $35 to $40, somewhere between 30 and 40. I don't even know. It doesn't matter. But I bought three. I bought three, and the total price for everything at 50% off should have come to something like between $55 and $60. Somewhere there. Trust my memory on this. I'm trusting my memory.
And there's no special deal. If you buy three, you get something extra.
No, 50% off.
With purchase.
50% off. And they said at that time, because of the coronavirus, things may be a little bit delayed. Okay, no problem. A little bit delayed. One of the t-shirts has come. Only one. I bought three. Only one has come. And I was billed on American Express for $22.63. Meaning that the entire price is somewhere over $67. This is annoying to me because what I bought it for was less money than that. I not only haven't gotten everything, but the one thing I got was too much money. Right? You following that?
I am, but you want to make sure that it's not being sent as two different transactions where you might be paying tax and service fees on two different orders rather
maybe,
than the one that you made.
But I don't even have, I have one shirt. So on the back of my Eddie Bauer card, it says, for more information, visit www.eddiebauer.com.
No CEO phone number?
There's a phone number. I call. They cut you off. They turn off. You call. You press the right things. You scream representative. They just blow you out. Nobody answers. They say, COVID-19. Nobody's here. Leave us alone. They blow you out. Eddiebauer.com or eddiebauer.ca. What is that? California?
Sure.
Okay. And when you... Or Canada, maybe. When you write them, they say, we don't accept email at this address. And they don't give you an alternate address. So what is going on here, right? This is my point. What is going on here? So I called American Express, and I said, I'm going to contest. I've already paid the money. I paid it in my bill. But now I'm contesting it because I think it's too much money. And if I only get one shirt, I know it's too much money, right? Are you following this? Am I talking to myself here?
Am I
making sense? Am I making sense on Eddie Bauer?
Yes.
And
you're
like speaking. Their t-shirts. I do. But I even got the one with the worst color. It was like the third one.
That's why it was available to send immediately.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't immediate, though. It's a month later. We're a month from Memorial Day. I got it last week.
Do you know how... So
have a complaint here?
You do have a complaint, but I would like to see your confirmation email to see what exactly was the price of the t-shirt and to see how much you paid for, I don't know, sort of handling. Was there a shipping cost?
I don't know.
Might have been.
I don't know.
You might have not been able to reach the free shipping if, say, it was for $100, get free standard shipping in 5 to 7 days.
I have no idea.
Okay, so until I see that, I don't know if you paid the right amount or not. What were the other colors?
There was a dark gray and a dark blue and a light blue, and I got the light blue, and I didn't really want it. Can I read one more thing? No one get out of here. This is from Bell's Up Winery. This is from Dave Spector, Bell's Up Winery. Finally happened, my own David Aldridge moment. Last week, I was out working in the vineyard all day. When I finally got back, the woman to whom I'm related by marriage handed me a message that Tony Beeson had called to order some wine. My eyes immediately got wide, and I said out loud, I know that guy. He has a piano.
It needs a special label.
I started going into detail with her what that meant, but the blank look I was getting made it readily apparent that the origin story would take longer than I had at that moment. But anyway, I was happy to hear from Tony for a different reason. You see, we started our winery after moving to Oregon from Cincinnati, which you may remember is where Tony lives. As I've been chatting with Littles, the second they hear about our Cincinnati past, the first question I get is not about Grater's Ice Cream or Skyline Chili. It's, do you know Tony Beeson? And I've sadly had to say I didn't have any connection with him, or so I thought. So I called Tony back the next day and we had a lovely chat. I was talking about how my family had come to be in Cincinnati in the first place, namely that the company in Florida my father worked for was acquired by a Cincinnati company and we relocated. And that's when things got interesting. It turns out that Tony worked at the same Cincinnati company and not only knew my dad well, but worked closely with him for years, including on a massive project in Japan that was the bane of my dad's existence. Of course, after this, I had to call my dad, and he remembered Tony fondly. Strangely, though, he was unaware of Tony's musical prowess, which is a shame because my dad is a trombone player, and with my French horn and Tony's piano, we could have been on the way to forming the TK Philharmonic. Anyway, thanks for being the medium for such a neat connection. I really hope you're enjoying the wines. Let me know when you're ready for a refill. Is that not amazing?
That's fantastic.
Is that like, that's on the level of, I grew up next door to the Flying Vet. What?
Right.
What?
Now we just need a recording of Tony Beeson just tickling the keys as he's giving us his tasting notes on that Titan Pinot.
It's just, it's simply, it is, it's simply unbelievable. Or as Robert Palmer would say, simply irresistible. We'll take a break. Liz Clark, who's at the middle of two very big stories, will join us when we return. And I am Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show. The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is a Simply Safe ad. What's the number one sign of a bad home security system? A home security system that's so complicated, you never use it. This is exactly the type of security system Simply Safe has spent a decade fighting against. They believe that simple is safer, and it's exactly why Simply Safe is the home security for right now, when feeling safe at home has never been more important. Simply Safe was designed to be easy to use while protecting your whole home 24/7. Order online with the click of a button, open the box, place the sensors, plug it in, and your home is protected around the clock. No technician or salesperson has to come and disrupt your house. You don't need to pay outrageous monthly fees or sign a two-year contract. Then he asked me to tell a personal story about setting up Simply Safe. I stop. I can't. I can't put gas in my car. Stop. Simply Safe was named Best Overall Home Security of 2020 by U.S. News & World Report, and their 24/7 professional monitoring and emergency dispatch starts at 50 cents a day. Head to simplysafe.com/Tony and get free shipping and a 60-day money-back guarantee. That is SimpliSafe, S-I-M-P-L-I, simplysafe.com/Tony.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is sent to us by Andrew Giordano. Who's a longtime listener from New Jersey. You can hear the echoes of Liz Clark's favorite singer in this. This is his band, Ruby Roses, an indie pop band with a pop mentality, indie rock band with a pop mentality. This is our song, Shipwrecked, from our debut album, Some New Paradise. I mean, if you're listening to it and you don't hear Bruce Springsteen and Elvis Costello, you've never heard Bruce Springsteen and Elvis Costello. Right, Liz? I mean, that's...
Oh, yeah, yeah. Almost more Elvis than in the Attractions, you know, the whole vibe. Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
So Liz Clark joins us, and we are so happy to have her because there are two big stories in sports that have to do, I should preface this by saying, there are only two stories in sports now. One is the virus, and the other is race. That's all there are. Everything comes back to them, and I know this because I have to do this every single day. That's the way it is right now. Liz is at the middle of both of these, and has written extensively and eloquently over the last week or so on both of these. Let us start with NASCAR and what was revealed to be, by photos yesterday, an absolute noose that may or may not, I think may coincidentally have ended up in the pits or the barns, whatever they call it, of Bubba Wallace. But it is a noose. The first thing I would ask you is, what do you make of the immediate reaction, and whether or not it was over, I'm not talking about overreaction now, you know, what do you make of the immediate reaction of Steve Phelps, the president of NASCAR, and every single one of those drivers?
They have absolutely nothing to apologize for or walk back or qualify.
They're heroes. They're heroes.
Yeah. Yeah. Particularly after seeing the image of the noose. I mean, it had been described to me, and it was unmistakable that the FBI, even in announcing there was no hate crime, in their press release announcing no hate crime, they used the term noose four times in the headline of the FBI statement, in the text of the FBI statement. Throughout, the term noose was used, even in dismissing it. There's something visceral about seeing that image. It's not, you know, something you can read a couple different ways. It is jarring and it is gutting. It's a stone cold noose. And if you want to tell me it served another purpose, that may be. So their initial reaction I thought was tremendous, particularly because I covered USA Gymnastics, where the head of USA Gymnastics got multiple reports of criminal behavior and put them in a file drawer for months, and only involved the FBI you know, after multiple girls were molested by Larry Nassar. So that is how you don't handle the allegation of a federal crime, a hate crime, sexual abuse, whatever it may be. And, you know, given what NASCAR had gone through since it announced the Confederate ban, the Confederate flag display ban on the part of fans June 10th, given that they were going next to Talladega, you know, the most rough, you know, flag-waving stop in their national tour in the heart of the Deep South, you knew this was not going to go over well, even though it was limited crowds. When a crew member says, we have a noose in our garage, a crew member for your only black driver, you go down and look at it and see what was shared with everyone else yesterday, I have nothing but admiration for the steps they took, which meant telling Bubba Wallace, the driver, who was not in the garage, he never saw it, then putting out a press release. You condemn it as a heinous act, and then the FBI is there the next morning. And throughout, NASCAR was transparent. They said what they could say when they were allowed to say it. As the FBI worked, they weren't allowed to show this image nor talk with any detail about what was going on. And even after the FBI concluded there was no hate crime, NASCAR said, you know, we're not done here because there was a noose in our garage, whether it was directed at a single person or generically. Why was it there? A. B. Why did people just, like, go buy it? And, you know, we have a culture, apparently, where nobody sees a problem here. So there were a million reasons NASCAR wanted to keep looking harder, and they learned a bit more in their own internal investigation, but they haven't pinpointed who tied it, which I totally understand why that's impossible to do unless someone comes forward or rats somebody out. And I can explain why that's harder to do than a lot of people think who watch too much TV, don't understand NASCAR, and think that, oh, well, you just review the security footage, which you don't really have. But go ahead.
Well, it doesn't matter ultimately that it was not aimed at Bubba Wallace. That doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. What matters here is that he's the one black driver, and just through coincidence, it is in his area. So his reaction is completely understandable.
Oh yeah.
What I'm getting to is that in a matter of days, NASCAR has sought to remake utterly its image in the United States at what might be at an economic cost to them. That is altogether possible. And yeah. Steve Phelps has done this, been courageous, and every single driver, and God knows Richard Petty.
I know, the king.
Richard Petty, they don't call you the king for no reason at all. And they stood shoulder to shoulder with this driver. Again, I hope it wasn't aimed at him. I don't believe it necessarily was. That's not the point. The point is the NASCAR drivers felt one of their own was being threatened, and they stood shoulder to shoulder, which is a lot greater unanimity than you've seen in baseball, football, or basketball on anything. Yeah. On anything. Yeah. NASCAR, which you've covered for years and years and years, how do you feel about this?
Yeah, so let me first say, I totally, you spoke so beautifully there and so on point. And when you said the reaction, I thought you meant, like, was NASCAR rushing to judgment? Because
basically,
that's all I've heard just on social media, like, from the total cabal of conspiracists who think it was staged and NASCAR has to apologize for calling it a noose because it obviously was just a normal door pull and blah, blah, blah. Oh, no, you have no idea the number.
No,
of,
I don't look at that stuff.
Okay. So to your point on the affirmative, on the unity, yes, that response was all you said and more. So now I've lost sight of the next question. Was it, what do I make of what? The whole thing or?
You've covered this sport.
Yes.
It has been cast in America as a regional, southern, forgive me, redneck culture. The actions of the sport and the drivers are anything but that at the moment and far greater in terms of unanimity than any other sport. Is this a sea change, or was it there all along? What do you think?
Yes. Boy, this is so interesting. It is really dramatic, and it is way ahead of other sports leagues, both in word, symbol, and deed. So NASCAR, it deserves, owns, and it's just a point of fact. It began in the South. It builds on a Southern culture of souping up cars and running them on dirt tracks, and through brilliant marketing, you know, it became this juggernaut and then became a corporate juggernaut. It went through three generations of one family, and now it's being run by a quite bold and kind of out front president in Steve Phelps. So one thing people may have missed, for probably 20 years, at least 15 years, NASCAR has tried to dissociate from the Confederate flag. It has tried to get away from that heritage and has made clear it doesn't want its fans using its brand as a backdrop for their displays of Confederate flags, anything that could be perceived as hate. So in like 2002, around there, NASCAR banned displays of the Confederate flag on its cars, driver uniforms, any merchandise. If you were a vendor on its property, you couldn't sell anything with the Confederate flag on it. That was done. After 9 African Americans were slaughtered in the Charleston church by Dylan Roof in 2015, that's when Nikki Haley took down the Confederate flag from the South Carolina State Capitol. At that point, NASCAR asked its fans, like, please do not bring the Confederate flag to our track. We don't want it. We don't want to see it. Please don't bring it. So as you covered NASCAR over the years, you saw it less and less. It was not as common a sight. There's a core that is going to bring it and bring it proudly, and the highest percentage of that core shows up at Talladega, Alabama, at Darlington, South Carolina, you know, above all. So the fact that a couple days after NASCAR took the ultimate step, which they had considered for a long time, and it was Bubba calling for it that pushed them in this direction or made them realize this is the moment. They had been discussing it. At what point do we tell fans what they can do? You know, that's a step further. You know, we don't want any part of it. We don't want you to bring it. But now we're going to say, fans, you can't bring this to our tracks. And you could say that was a moral decision. They want to be on the right side of the issue. You could also say it's a business decision. We want to do everything we can to make our sport welcoming and comfortable for all, make every family feel like you can bring your kids. And a total craven corporate move. You could also say, if we want to invite, you know, David Aldridge, Mike Wilbon, you know, influencers in the media, we want to invite the CEO of Google and Apple to show what a great sport we have, why you want to invest in our brand, why you want to put your logo next to our logo. Do we want to entertain you and, you know, in a suite overlooking displays of the Confederate flag? No, you don't want to do that. So what they did that was that no other league has done is said what fans can and cannot do. This was not going to go over well. It was not going to go over well, most of all, at Talladega. And that's where they were when this happened.
It's a fascinating story. I think it's courageous by the drivers and courageous by the president. I want to, and again, it does not matter that it was not aimed specifically at Bubba Wallace. That's not the point. You can understand how Bubba Wallace would hear about it and see it and go, whoa, that was at me. Of course he would say that, whether it was or was not. That would be in his DNA to say that. So, but thank God I don't read the internet. Let me go to Novak Djokovic, the famous anti-vaxxer Novak Djokovic, who now finds himself with the coronavirus. What kind of tournament did he run? What happened? What is this story?
Yeah. So tennis professional tennis has been shut down since early March. Nobody has been able to compete, earn any money. Obviously, Novak doesn't need any money. But tennis has planned to get back in business in mid-August. The thing the top players are pointing to is the next chance to win a slam. So the U.S. Open supposedly will be held the first 2 weeks of September in New York under tight, tight protocols. So, you know, common sense, tennis players want to shake off the rust, want to start competing, and you can't really hit against a wall but for so long. So Novak, who is from Serbia, organized his own little exhibition and invited fellow players to join him in this exhibition that was going to cover three Balkan countries, Serbia, Croatia, and Bosnia-Herzegovina. Like roughly a month long, just three successive weekends, you play these matches, and to my horror and the horror of anyone, you know, watching images or footage or cover, you know, looking at what was happening there in Serbia when the tournament opened, zero effort to guard against the coronavirus. No mask wearing, no distancing. Opening press conference there, the players, top three of the top 10 players in the world, seated side by side, in front of a room full of reporters, no one wearing a mask. They're passing the microphone around. Then in the matches, you know, they're shaking hands, draping their arms around one another. Then comes footage at the disco in Belgrade. They're slithering around, you know, in a crowded dance floor without shirts. I mean, good for them having a good time, but this is the coronavirus. Nothing was followed. You know, 1 week in, Novak is taking bows for what a success this thing is. This is just so great. It has ostensibly some charitable purpose, and the players are happy playing. Oh, forgot. You know, thousands of fans attend, jammed into the stands. No requirement that they mask at all. So, you know, midway through the tournament, Grigor Dimitrov announces he tests positive. He had not been feeling well during the tournament, so he tests positive. At the moment, four players, including the world number one, Novak Djokovic, host architect of this tour, have tested positive, along with Novak's wife and two coaches, and God knows how many of the thousands of fans who attended have tested positive. So they've canceled the tour. Novak is taking well-deserved criticism. Well, I don't say he's taking it. He's getting well-deserved criticism. His parents actually pushed back and blamed one of the other players for bringing this virus to their son's tournament on the basis of nothing. Novak's, I guess, standing among fellow players is not great. And he's already kind of an outlier in many, many ways, as you say, is on record for saying he doesn't really believe in a coronavirus vaccine, and if one is developed, he won't take it. And he was out front in criticizing the U.S. efforts protocols for their tournament as just extreme.
Yeah. I would just point this out, that the worst person in tennis by far, Nick Kyrgios, said that Djokovic was stupid. That guy can't stay on the court anywhere in the world because he's such a wild card dope. And he says that Djokovic is an idiot.
Yeah, and right? He said it was so brilliant. So not only that, he's the one who shared the video of the disco ball slithering, shirtless, partying. He's only 25, and he is one of those guys. He is maybe the most talented, naturally talented athlete you'll ever see in tennis, and the most self-defeating. I mean, he makes John McEnroe in his prime look like a lamb. You know, he is such capable of such brilliance and such utter self-destruction. And he's only 25, so he tweets very self-aware, like, don't come at me that I do stupid things. Look at this. You know, he called it boneheaded even before anybody got the virus. And then he's like, come on, this is ridiculous. And he was smart enough to have no part of this tournament, as was Nadal, as was, you know, Tsitsipas and a bunch of other pros.
What a delight to have you on the show on all these things you've written about. Thank you, Liz.
Thank you, Tony. Great to hear your voice.
Liz Clark, boys and girls. We'll take a break. Chris Saliza will join us when we return. I am Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Policy Genius ad. With everything going on right now, a lot of people are asking if it's even possible to buy life insurance at all. And the short answer is yes. You can buy life insurance during a pandemic. And if you have loved ones, depending on your income, you probably should. As an insurance marketplace, Policy Genius is in contact with the life insurance companies on their platform every day. They're keeping track of all the changes in the market so you won't have to, which means they can get you covered quickly and for the best price. Here's how it works. Policy Genius compares quotes from the top life insurance companies in one place. It takes just a few minutes to compare quotes from the top insurers to find your best price. This doesn't just save a lot of legwork. You could save $1,500 a year or more by using Policy Genius to compare life insurance policies. Once you apply, the Policy Genius team will handle all the paperwork and red tape for free. So if you hit any speed bumps during the application process, they will be there to take care of everything. So if you're one of the many people looking to buy life insurance right now, but you're not sure where to start, head to policygenius.com. Policy Genius will find you the best rate and handle the process completely. They'll get you and your family protected and hopefully give you one less thing to worry about.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is a new song from Hot Pink Hangover, sent to us by Davey Hazard, guitarist. Hot Pink Hangover recently released a brand new video for our single Fake Friends for Life. The song pokes fun at the ever-evolving digital world that we live in and the online friends that we desperately try to collect along the way. You can check out the video for this song on our YouTube page. Just search Hot Pink Hangover and prepare for your system to be overloaded with technological insanity. This is called Fake Friends for Life. Michael, if groups like Hot Pink Hangover want to send in their music, how do they do it?
Send us your music by emailing it to jingles@tonykornheiser.com.
And are we selling Johnny Ove?
We still have the Bootsy 3 Johnny O code is still available.
Bootsy is 3.
Bootsy is now... Thank you.
Yes, Rich.
And you have a package arriving today to our house, and they have a new partnership with Revo Sunglasses. So go take a look.
Oh, okay, great. We can all, yeah, everybody can always use sunglasses. Chris Saliza joins us now. I do want to talk about politics, but I would never just jump right into that without asking, do you have any great stories of your own particular failures that you'd like to tell us about?
Well, I always have parenting failures.
Yes.
I would, first of all, I wanted to wish Michael's eldest child, a masculine child, happy birthday.
Yes, he's 3.
It's big.
Yeah.
He does look like both Michael and Liz are so tall that Bootsy's going to be like 6'7".
Great.
So, yeah, it's really good.
6'7" and can throw 105 on the gun. That's what we're looking for.
Eighth inning specialist.
We're looking for that relief work. Yep.
Speaking of baseball, great transition, Tone. My older son last night, 2 for 3, 4 RBIs, 2 innings pitched, no earned runs, 4 Ks. How's that?
Wow.
Line?
That's a great line. Did you do anything to make him feel bad after the game?
I didn't. It was a rare moment in which I didn't screw anything up.
That's good to know.
Now, with the sanitizer, is he getting extra spin on that fastball?
Well, yeah. Well, what we do is you take advantage of the use of sanitizer. That's right. You put a little on your cap.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Gaylord Perry style.
Attach it to the ball every time you put the ball in play. So I'm going to borrow your brilliance on politics, and I'm going to ask you a bunch of things. The easiest question is, where are we now? But the context of where are we now seems to me to be twofold. One is, how does the current president, Donald Trump, broaden his appeal, which seems to be at whatever number it is, it seems to be solid there, but no more and not enough. And how can he be in this position now when the person he's running against, Joe Biden, is invisible? Like, he hasn't said or done anything at all. So that's the context of where are we now.
So I'll answer the second question first. Biden, whether by strategy or necessity, I mean, he's a 77-year-old guy, and obviously coronavirus is still kicking around the country, as Arizona, Texas, et cetera, have learned, it has largely been absent from the campaign trail. He gave a speech yesterday about health care. I mean, he does stuff, but it's not a ton. But what that the effect of that is, and again, I don't know if it's necessity or strategy, but what it does is it shines a very bright light on Donald Trump. And Donald Trump does not benefit from having a very bright light shown on him because he says and does lots of things that you shouldn't do as a president, whether it's, you know, the coronavirus is going to fade away to George Floyd and protesters and, you know, these are just looters and terrorists. So Biden not being present, Biden. Now, I don't think that he can do this the entire campaign, but he can do it for a while. And I think when you say Trump and his numbers are basically steady, I would disagree with that slightly in that the last 2 days you've had state polling come out in swing states, Florida, Arizona, Ohio, Iowa, North Carolina, Wisconsin. Donald Trump is behind by 8 to 10 to 12 points in both polls done by the New York Times and by Fox News. It's by far his worst stretch of swing state polling that he's seen. You're right, Cone, in that he's never going to drop below about 36, 37, 38% approval. There's just people going to be with him no matter what. But I would say he's in a worse place than he has ever been before when it comes to getting reelected. There's no question about that.
So how does he, assuming you've got to get to make it competitive into the mid to high 40s, because then it's within the margin of error, how does he broaden his appeal? What does he do?
Well, so there's what he could do and what he will do. What he could do is stop running a primary campaign in the general election. What he will do is continue to run a primary campaign in the general election because he's only got, you know, he only has the one speed. It's funny you're talking about 105 mile an hour fastball. So let's say you got a 95 mile an hour fastball, but you don't have any other pitches. It works for a while, but then you get to a point where you get better hitters in the pros and they can hit that because they know what's coming. Well, he only has the one speed. He doesn't have a change of speed. He doesn't have a curve. He doesn't have a slurve. He doesn't, you know, he doesn't have anything but that straightforward, very red meat. I don't know if you saw any of the speech he gave to this group called Turning Point USA, which is a conservative students group in Phoenix on Wednesday. But it was, you know, it was sort of a like greatest hits of Trump, and that's what he gives people now. He's like a stand-up comedian. He's honed his bits. Nigel can speak to this. Nigel could take a few cues off of this. He's honed his bits to the point where he is only giving those people who were at those rallies exactly what they want, right? So it's lock her up, and it's the China flu. And it's, you know, he's giving them all that stuff. The problem is in doing that, he's turning off suburban women particularly. He's turning off older voters. He's turning off college-aged white voters. And without college-educated white voters, and without those groups, he has no chance. His base has shrunk from the 2016 election. And it wasn't barely big enough in that election. I'll remind people, he lost the popular vote by almost 3 million. Hillary Clinton.
So let me get to critical positions, I would say, for Biden. There are two questions I have. A is, why would he debate at all? Yeah. I mean, you know, I don't even know why he would appear on the same stage with Trump at all, and I really mean that. And B, the only thing it seems to me that can really hurt him is if he picks a vice president that people don't want. And he seems to have boxed himself in by saying, for sure, he would pick a woman to be his running mate. Can you address both of those things?
Yeah, I think the tradition is the answer to the first one. There's always been three presidential debates in the modern era. So sort of, you know, probably Kennedy on. There's been three general election debates between the two presidential candidates and one vice presidential debate. Now, you don't have to do that. You can opt out, though, you know, there would be some negative press. But again, I don't know how much that would hurt you. I think it is evidence of where Trump knows he is, despite him saying, like, oh, we've got a lot of internal polls that show me winning, which, I don't think is true. But it's evidence of where he is, that he is now calling for more debates. He wants to debate Biden more, which, if you remember a year ago, Trump was the one saying, I'm not sure I'm going to participate in any of these debates. I may not do any of them. So the VP thing, yes, you can get it wrong. John McCain got it wrong with Sarah Palin, but I don't think, and you could ask your golfing partner this, I don't think Barack Obama thinks that he won the 2008 election because John McCain picked Sarah Palin.
Right.
I think John McCain could have picked the greatest VP candidate ever and still would not have beaten Barack Obama. So I think it tends to have less impact than we think. Even if you pick someone who's not seen as great, and I remind you, George H.W. Bush won with Dan Quayle as his VP. You know, I mean, it's not decisive, I don't think. So I think Biden will do everything he can to kind of hide out, for lack of a better word, because as long as the spotlight is on Donald Trump, as has been shown over the last few months, if the spotlight shines solely on Donald Trump, people do not like what they see. Enough people do not like what they see.
So this is, to me, and I'm not a political strategist at all, but I don't know how you run when the other guy can say there's 200,000 dead people. 200,000 dead. What? Yeah. How do you run against that?
I went through yesterday. I went through all the things that Trump has said about the coronavirus going away. It's really stunning stuff. He said last Thursday, did an interview with Hannity, and said it's fading away. It's already gone. I don't even like to talk about it. In January 22nd, he was asked about it and said, it's in China. I'm not worried about it. We've got it totally under control. I mean, there's probably 40 clips, maybe more, of him saying either it's not a big deal or we've got it under control. And that doesn't have – that's before you take into account all the clips of him saying we have enough tests, when there was demonstrably false. And now saying – I've asked my administration to slow down the testing. Then his administration said he was kidding. Then he said he wasn't kidding. I mean, there's just so much there on something that matters. You know, a lot of the stuff with Trump in the past, you could say the stakes were low. It's like, oh, yeah, he said some things that I don't really trust. He's very into this healthcare talk.
This is take your dog to work day. So she's here. So, yeah. You know, you have to live with it.
I'm just glad she likes to hear what I have to say.
Yeah.
I took those as barks of assent.
They were.
So, you know, he has said and done a lot of things that are very questionable, obviously. The thing that I think is different about the coronavirus is there are dead people. This is not like, hey, I don't agree with what he says on healthcare, or like, I don't agree with what he says on conservative judges. This is... there are people getting sick and dying, and at least part of that is because this is someone who can't admit he didn't get it right at the start, and by the way, can't do the most basic thing that we know actually helps, which is wear a mask when you are in public and you can't stay away from people. And he has turned that into stunningly to me, and I think we will look back at this when books are written about it and say, how could we have let this happen? He has turned this into some sort of political flag or partisan flag that you wear, that, you know, if you really love Trump, you don't wear a mask. I mean, at this Phoenix thing, there's thousands of kids in this indoor thing in Arizona, which, as you and Wilbon talked about on Wednesday, I mean, this is, if not the biggest hotspot in the country, certainly one of the top three, and no one has a mask on. I continue to say it has nothing to do with politics. It has everything to do with public health. And yet that's where we are. And so, yes, I think his numbers, if you combine the coronavirus response and the George Floyd response, the we need to dominate the streets, you know, these people are all looters and terrorists, he's totally tone deaf as it relates to what he has said in the past on race and the current situation with race in this country. Those two things have combined. It's like in the perfect storm when those two storms combine off the coast and you get a much worse storm. That's what's happened to him. Now, it's 131 days until the election, so maybe he can pull it out. As I remind everyone on the show anytime, I didn't think he was going to win in 2016. So, but I would say he is in a darker place electorally than he has ever been before, certainly in this race and even in 2016.
So I will get you out of here on this, and it's not that I expect this to happen, but unlike Donald Trump, who is a businessman, not a politician, the overwhelming majority of people who are elected to the House and the Senate and in gubernatorial races are career politicians, and they know how to count. It's a different way of counting. What is the likelihood that a group of Republicans get together and they say, we're going down the drain with this guy. This is a no-win for all of us. We've got to get him out of here. Is there any likelihood of that to you?
Is there the possibility that conversations are happening? Sure. Could they do it? No. No, because he's not leaving. And what hold do they have on him? What could Mitch McConnell go to Donald Trump and say, hey, we need you out because you're going to cost us the Senate? Why would Donald Trump, what in his life would convince you he would listen to that? And how could Mitch McConnell make that happen? I mean, there's this whole 25th Amendment thing. Well, I just don't think Donald Trump's cabinet and is going to revolt against him, and Mike Pence is going to revolt against him 4 months before the election. I think that's a pipe dream. I think he is going to run, and if it is for re-election, and if the environment and his numbers are anything similar to what they are now, he will not only lose, but Democrats will retake control of the Senate and keep control of the House, and Joe Biden will have a unified Washington, just like Barack Obama had from 2008 to 2010. Now, what happens beyond that? What does the post-Trump Republican Party look like? Is there a post-Trump Republican Party? Remember, if he loses tone in November, Trump could run again in 2024. Grover Cleveland did it 1888 and 1892. So, I mean, it can happen. And I don't sense Donald Trump is going away. You know, I think he is an entertainer. He is a provocateur. He's someone who loves the spotlight. We've talked about it on and off air a million times. That is not the profile of someone who says, you know what, I didn't win. Okay, the people didn't want me. They didn't approve of my policies. I'm going to go off and just live a private life. That's not who he is. I don't know that if he loses, he ever concedes, like actually acknowledges that he's lost. He basically, I think he'll say, it was all rigged, it was biased. He said that, and he won in 2016. He said 3 to 5 million people voted illegally. So I don't know that you can have any confidence that Trump admits he ever loses. And I certainly don't think he will go away if he, even if he does lose. But I think he is primed at this point to lose, and not just lose, but lose to the extent that he will drag down some of his Senate Republicans with him.
But as you said, we're still a long way out. We're still a long way out. Stuff changes.
Every day.
Stuff changes. Thank you, Chris.
Yep. Thanks, Don. Always great to hear from you.
Chris Cillizza, boys and girls. We will take a break. We will come back with a jingle. We'll have some email. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show. Tony Kornheiser Show.
Got some checks that I stashed. No deposits, want 200 in cash. It was extreme. I went to SunTrust on Connecticut, across from Johns BP in the capital, Washington, D.C. Found out the lobby was closed, they even locked the door. The only other option, never done it before. I never been in a drive-thru. Too far away, had to stick out my shoes. I wasn't sure what I had to do, till I saw the pneumatic tube. Put in the checks, and then it flew. Sent an ID, but they wanted to. Ooh, 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 ooh. Send it in the pneumatic tube.
This is fantastic. That's Jared Ziegler in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, a name we are unfamiliar with, and that's to Patti LaBelle's new attitude, Pneumatic Tube. That's wonderful. Absolutely wonderful. Thank you. That'll do it for us today. But before we get to the mailbag, let me just say, and we say this in honor of Liz, this town rips the bones from your back. It's a death trap. It's a suicide rap. We got to get out while we're young because tramps like us, baby, we were born to run. Thanks to Liz Clark of the Washington Post. Thanks to Chris Saliza of CNN. Thanks to our sponsors as well, Simply Safe and Policy Genius. Remember, you can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, Radio.com. If you get the show through iTunes, please leave us a review.
With all the beeping, I like to think Saliza was just driving around his neighborhood to let everyone know he drives a Tesla.
There was a lot of beeping, wasn't there? Was that his car,
do you think?
Oh, okay. We have a lot of things about the numerology games and the license plates. From Pat Lathrop in Rogers, Arkansas, hearing Tony talk about his new license plate game, Over and Under 100, I was reminded what a podcast would sound like if it were hosted by Rain Man. P.S. I am now wearing visors. New thing for me at 55.
Tour visors?
I guess.
No, he pitches Wednesday.
From Dr. Patrick Newman in Richmond, Virginia. Your story with DC plates on Monday made me feel not so alone in my license plate numerology obsession. In elementary school, we had a game we called 24 that Michael may remember, which he doesn't. In essence, each card had four numbers, and you had to figure out how to combine the numbers using the basic four functions of arithmetic to make 24. I should have been the Forest Edge Elementary School champion, only to be robbed on a technicality. I yelled, "I got it," when solving the winning card. If you think now at age 37 that I'm still bitter about that result, you better believe it. I still remember how that card was solved. Anyway, to this day, over 25 years later, I still try to solve 24 on every license plate number I see. A good plate can make 24 bonus points if it is a complicated way. There you go, combining long-held petty grudges and numbers.
It explains everything about my DC elementary school education that I was trying to attribute it to a TV show.
Pete in St. Paul, Minnesota. I really enjoyed the gambling segment in the last podcast, but I was a little confused. If you hit 100, is that a push or a win? Anyway, I'll take under 30 for the next red Honda you come across. Put me down for $50. From Jamie Colley in San Rafael, California. An update about the odds of your license plate game from your San Rafael, California-based math correspondent. First, though, it feels important to acknowledge that while unlikely you'd find a license plate sum greater than 100, where the first or third digit is zero, it is not nearly as difficult as hitting a baseball. Everyone knows that's the hardest thing in the universe, he writes, but it's the galaxy, not the universe. Now for some odds. With a bit of rounding, there's a 50.5% chance any DC plate you see has a sum less than 100, a 1% chance of exactly 100, and a 48.5% chance the sum is greater than 100. That was my point all along, that it's easier to go low than go high. If the first or third digit is zero, then there is a 99.1% chance the sum is less than 100, 0.18% chance of exactly 100, or 0.72 chance of greater than 100, or 72 out of 10,000. That's why when I found the 0992, I just thought that was just tremendous. I'm assuming some number combinations don't get printed due to being deemed inappropriate, but that may be getting too deep in the license plate weeds, even for you. From Tom Zwolan in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Hope you're doing well and staying healthy during these crazy times. Just wanted to let you know I've been a huge fan over the years, and you've had a tremendous impact on my life. I truly enjoyed listening to you on ESPN Radio years ago and was sad when you signed off for the last time. Well, I got fired. Love PTI, your books, and your podcasts. Your blend of knowledge and humor is second to none. Back in 2003, my family and I stopped by to see you at the ESPN Zone in D.C.
It's the Sports Zone.
Yeah, no longer in existence. We took a picture with you. My daughter yelled, "Booyah!" You signed your book, "I'm Back for More Cash." I gave you a Detroit Red Wings golf shirt, and you gave me a bag of Mr. B's potato chips. I ate the chips, but I still have the bag. It's a treasured memory. Again, I hope all is going well. I wish you the best. And if you ever make it out to Ann Arbor, you have an open invitation for a round of golf. The UM course, University of Michigan course, is very nice. From Chris in Knoxville, I chuckled listening to you talking about the flushing of toilets at the Raiders' new stadium on PTI last week. The simultaneous flushing of enough toilets to serve 65,000 people might sound impressive to some. However, as a facilities employee at the University of Tennessee, we do this every year before the start of the season to be sure all of our pipes can handle that much water. My wife is also a university employee, so she comes down and we flush toilets together. I can't think of a more romantic date, can you? Our stadium holds 102,000 people. Our record attendance was over 111,000, including staff against the Gators in 2004. But upgrades to premium seating a few years ago has us down to a mere 102,000 folks. Thank you and all of your staff for doing the pod. I enjoy it very much. And just in case Nigel drops out on the call, don't forget to thank the people at Bethesda Bagels. This is Chris in Knoxville. Nigel, have you thanked them?
Thank you, Bethesda Bagels. BethesdaBagels.com. Go check them out. We love them. You will as well.
If you're out on your bike tonight, everyone, as always, do wear white.
I have a piano.
He can play, can he? Tony Beeser.
Oh, always had a computer. She got a wild post overdose with a side of caffeine. She pushed away her friends and her mother and father. All she needed was right there on a screen. Posted such a beautiful picture. She was wearing her favorite dress and she fixed up her hair. The feed couldn't fill her hunger as she waited for prey. She begged baby Jesus for more likes than yes. For life.